Dear Mrs. Rushing, November 23, 1994, I'm pleased to inform you that on the above date, the President granted you a full and unconditional pardon. A presidential pardon is a sign of forgiveness. It does not erase or expunge the record of conviction and does not indicate innocence on any application or the other document which requires the information pardon.
IKR, I know, right? Is a podcast about women for women. Hosts Allie and Latasha, along with special guests, explore the hidden world and narratives going on inside the heads of everyday women. What makes them tick and how they wrestle with stuff like God, work, family, friends, success, failures, coffee, and Netflix. Real conversations with real women. Let's go. On today's episode, we're talking about how mistakes can dominate thinking. I know for me, I struggle with moving past my mistakes and how we move from mistakes to pardon. This is the one about your past and drug dealing.
Well, I want to give a welcome to our guest here on IKR. This is Betty Rushing. Welcome, Betty.
Thank you.
It's really great to have you here today. And I know we're going to get to the story of that pardon in a few minutes. But why don't you just take a minute in however you want to just kind of introduce yourself to us.
Okay. So. At this point in my life, I'm slowing down working. My husband and I have owned a company for 30 years. And so I do a lot of volunteer work here at Crossroads. And I mentor ladies. And
tell us how old you are. We have a lot of young listeners, so it helps.
I'm 70. I just turned 70.
Congratulations. Yes. Yeah. Was that a hard birthday for you? My mom had a hard time with 70.
Oh, no. I was excited. It's good to still be here.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I like getting older. When you hear my story, there's no reason I should still be alive, so I'm just thankful.
Great.
Aging is good.
So why don't you take us back to a little bit of your life story. Give us a sense of who you grew up to be and just where your life took you, big picture, to end with a presidential pardon. How in the world did you land there?
Okay. I grew up like a lot of people with a lot of insecurities. And in my head, my reality was that I was not loved and not popular. So I lived kind of in that reality. When in truth, that was not true. I was homecoming queen and I was popular, but I didn't live that out. So as my life progressed, I started just searching in just any direction I could to find validation or acceptance or love. The first thing I went into after college was a career, very successful. One of the youngest officers ever elected at the bank, one of the first women, fast track, promotion after promotion, successful career. But part of what got me into that insecure place, and I'm backtracking a little, when I was 19, I got pregnant with twins and ended up with an abortion. For years, I didn't tell that part of my story because that was one of the hardest things for me to get past and forgive myself over. But I think that's what started the downward spiral. And in that search for significance or validation, the career didn't do it. So then I really started drinking and doing drugs. And that drug use really escalated where I ended up doing cocaine every day. In that search, I met somebody that said, oh, I know this will make you happy if you get out of banking. I knew that he was bringing marijuana in from South America. And he said, if you will give me or loan me $100,000, then I'll give you the money back, you know, plus profit, and you can get out of banking. So I did that. I embezzled the money, put a fraudulent loan on the books, and gave the money to this guy who was smuggling pot from Medellin, Colombia. As it happens, he didn't pay the money back right away, and I became a basket case, got fired for my behavior from the bank, and went to South Florida to try to figure out what he was doing, and found out that he was in business with the underworld. So I soon became a fugitive, not only from the FBI, but from the underworld as well.
So how did you eventually get caught?
The girl that I was living with's boyfriend was in the Cuban cocaine trade. And so he was getting in trouble and turned me in so he could get off. So he took me to a restaurant. The FBI came.
Wow.
And at that point, I was charged with 13 felony counts, 10 years imprisonment punishment for each, so 130 years, and a $100,000 bond to bail me out. And I didn't have that money, and my parents didn't have that money. So we really thought I was in for good.
Were you in touch with your family during this time? And what had happened to people from your past? It sounds like there was some level of stability in your family and your upbringing. And mm-hmm. where were all they during this period in your life?
It was really awful for them because mm-hmm. they knew nothing about what I was going through until the FBI knocks on their door.
And they knew nothing?
Nothing.
They didn't have a clue.
I led a real dual life. Mm-hmm. They didn't see that there was any drug use or anything. They, again, just saw me as a successful career woman. So all of a sudden, I disappear, and I was afraid to call anybody, so no one knew where I was. And they were devastated. And that really broke my heart, what I did to my family, particularly my mom and dad. But then when I got arrested, I was able to contact them. And one of the scenes, just like in the movies, mom comes down to visit me, speaking through the little metal hole, and we put our hands up on the glass and touch, and I'll never forget what her face looked like. It was, you know, she's seeing a daughter she couldn't help. The key point that I want to make about when I was still in prison, it was a scary environment. Mm-hmm. So anytime they'd let me out of my jail cell, I'd go. I went to a lot of church services and anything, mm-hmm. just for the safety. I took a little tract back to my jail cell and read that, and that's when I gave my heart over to the Lord. I read that I could have a do-over, that He would forgive me, that I would have a new life, that there was a hope for me, and that He loved me. And then this void in my life was suddenly just filled with this new hope that I had never had. And I was still looking at 130 years in prison. So it was absolutely amazing, and obviously the Lord, that I would change so much and still be behind bars.
So you were convicted and you went to prison.
Ended up, my parents put their house up as collateral to bail me out. And I came back and did a plea deal with the FBI. And I pled guilty to one felony count, but I was supposed to go back for 5 years.
From that point, when you met God mm-hmm. in a more personal way, how long after that were you still in prison?
I was still, it was another few weeks
okay.
that I was still in prison.
Okay.
But even a guard noticed how different I was and took me out and said, okay, you're not that little mouse hiding under your cot. What's going on?
Uh-huh.
And I got to share my story for the first time, so
wow.
it was neat. The judge later said he doesn't know what came over him, but at my sentencing trial, he decided not to send me back to prison. So I was put on a very strict probation instead of going back. So I didn't have to serve any more time.
You interpret that, I think, from what you said, as the action of God's grace over your life?
Yes.
Is that fair
yeah.
to say?
Yeah, it was. It really, really was a miracle that I didn't go back because I clearly was guilty. You know, my life just started changing in a lot of ways. But in God's sweet grace, He didn't hit me with all of it at the same time. Mm-hmm. For instance, the F word had always been my favorite word. And I started feeling guilty about it, you know, and I'd never felt guilty about it before. So, you know, just started having a conscience about things mm-hmm. and making changes. So it was a slow progress. But I think that was because He was extending His grace to me. Mm-hmm. But I think another critical turning point in my life, about 3 years later, I ended up with breast cancer, had a mastectomy, really got into the Bible and learned that it's just full of hope and guidance and love and forgiveness, and that I get a do-over every day.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I feel like, was the bigger turning point in my life.
Since then, since that point of breast cancer, how do you use that do-over?
First of all, I need the do-over every day. you know, I got into the Word and realized so many times it says you're continuously being forgiven. You know, you are progressively growing. So there's all this journey type words that I'm on a journey and that every day's new. And yes, I'm going to make mistakes, whatever that looks like. It brings me a lot of hope. And then I try to share that because a lot of people think, oh, I've really messed up. There's no hope. Mm-hmm. There's always hope.
The closer you began to walk toward him, little by little, step by step, it wasn't like lightning bolts from the sky. It was a small step toward more and more hope. I hear that all over your story. It's amazing because knowing and meeting you in this phase of your life, I could not have made up your past. This is a totally different person. It is a totally different person. And that's amazing to me.
I would like to say that his part is offering us the hope. And his word gives us so much direction. But there is our part to it. And that's the choices we make. And I look at how my mind, what I thought was reality was so powerful when I was young. The insecurity, the self-doubt, that continues to be an issue for me, and I think an issue for a lot of people. What we allow ourselves to focus on, what we think about, is our part of this journey.
That's amazing to me that you would say, even now at 70 years old, after living a story of resurrection and hope, that you would still say, I struggle against self-doubt. I struggle against insecurity. Tell me what runs through your head. I mean, literally, give me an example of the conversation that's taking place in your head.
I have a perfect.
What is that?
I have a perfect example.
Great.
I was just with a friend last week, and in my head, I'm going, and I've known her for 35 years, good friends. I was like, I think maybe she doesn't like me anymore. You know, I wonder what I've done. You know, so there's all this self-doubt. Well, it turns out she needs glasses and she won't wear them. So she's squinting and I'm interpreting that as, you know, dislike and she's disappointed in me. It had nothing to do with me. I catch it quicker. I catch that stinking thinking and I stop it. But I think you have to be aware that you do it and then you have to make the effort to stop it. For me, that will always be my journey. I will always work on that. But thank goodness I catch it quicker. And also have those tools of how to fight that. You know, what to focus on. Be thankful.
I'm just curious, just because that's a very real world application. I mean, oftentimes I feel like the world revolves around me. The reality is somebody needs glasses. So I'm really curious to know, like, how you found out that, like, just the real world, how'd you find out she needed glasses?
I don't know if it has to do with the fact that I'm 70 now. But I do just ask people, you know, and I think just being real with people, then she was, you know, it gives other people permission to be real with you too. So we had a really good conversation about it. I did not tell her that she should wear glasses because, you know, she's frowny. But
that's really funny. I spent my summer talking to all kinds of different women about conversations that happen in their head. And one of the conversations that continually plays, and the exact details are different, but so many women I talk to have something about their past which they regret, that they are living with all the time, that they might even be living out daily circumstances that are a result of whatever went down. I'm sure that you had things like that that were hard to escape, that would replay themselves in your mind. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the ones that were especially hard to let go of? And then how did you do that? How do you walk away from the things that just replay and replay and replay?
Well, I think the thing that first comes to mind is the abortion. Because then when I married Jerry, we were not able to get pregnant. And I'm not sure if it was drug use or what happened, but I just could not conceive. And that was devastating. And I really beat myself over the head with that a lot. That was something I really had to deal with for a lot of years. but really had to come to terms with as I got older. Now we have a blast. We just spoil other people's kids and then send them home, you know, like grandparents are supposed to do. But that was very hard, and I had to really work through. It didn't help anything for me to beat myself over the head. It didn't change the situation. Again, it was making the choice not to focus on that, and certainly not to focus on something I couldn't change.
And did it come to you in terms of thoughts? What were those thoughts like? Like, mm-hmm. How did you hear them in your head?
If I had not had that.
It's the past regret.
You know, it's that if I hadn't. Mm-hmm. And honestly, at that point, we wanted to adopt, but I couldn't because I was a convicted felon. So that was a tough consequence.
Wow. And where did that separation start to take place where you were able to leave things in the past where they belonged?
That's a continual journey. Mm-hmm. We have an enemy. You know, in John 10:10, he's here to kill, steal, and destroy, or Joyce Meyer says, mm-hmm. or at the least distract. and I just, it's like he just grabs me by the back of the neck and shakes me sometimes with my past. And I have to catch that and not go down that rabbit hole. You know, it's not healthy thinking for me. Mm-hmm. And I think the word has so many promises of hope and encouragement that I'll go there or I'll pray.
So you almost have a replacement. I've heard people who stop smoking talk about that.
Yeah.
Every time I That's would have point. Smoked, I do something else instead, mm-hmm. and they'll have a replacement mm-hmm. sort of behavior. So it's almost like a thought mm-hmm. replacement.
I'm going to replace this.
Yeah, I have a good one. Here's a thought replacement. Your story reminds me of the beginning of Romans 5. So this is a good thought replacement if anyone's looking for one. Romans 5 starts like this. Therefore, since we've been made right with God through faith, we have peace with God through our Lord Jesus Christ, through whom we have gained access by faith into the grace in which we now stand. And we can boast in the hope of the glory of God. Not only so, but we also find glory in our sufferings, because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance character, and character hope. Mm. And hope does not put us to shame, because God's love is poured into our hearts through the Holy Spirit, who has been given to us. Any part of that, that's exactly mm-hmm. your story.
Mm-hmm. It really is.
You've got access to God mm-hmm. through faith in Christ that's mm-hmm. given you an amazing hope. Mm-hmm. Totally changed your perspective on suffering, produced perseverance, grew character. I mean, it's mm-hmm. all that.
Mm-hmm. So you mean to tell me that you can leave anything behind? Like, you can leave anything behind?
I think the answer would be mentally, yeah. where your yes. thoughts are, for sure.
Yes.
Because it's all choice. And I thought about whether I would talk about that. You know, choice sounds like I'm oversimplifying it, but it's not easy. Yeah. But it is still our choice. We choose what we think about.
Mm-hmm. You know, I love the language of the pardon letter that you read to us, because it says a presidential pardon is a sign of forgiveness. Mm-hmm. It does not erase mm-hmm. or expunge the record of conviction and does not indicate innocence. That's exactly what we're sitting here talking about in mm-hmm. our own lives and in our spiritual life together with God. He doesn't suddenly not think we were really guilty. He knows mm-hmm. our past mm-hmm. and he chooses forgiveness mm-hmm. and he chooses to allow a new life and he chooses to recreate us to walk more and more toward him. He doesn't suddenly think, well, you didn't do those things. Mm-hmm. Of course we did. Mm-hmm. That's the power of being forgiven. Mm-hmm. And it's the power of having a story. Then he's like, okay, great. Mm-hmm. Now that I've forgiven you and we're done with that thing, mm-hmm. why don't we use that to mm-hmm. bring some other people hope? Mm-hmm. So it's just an incredible privilege. And I find it fascinating that your pardon reads exactly that way. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever read it that way, but I couldn't escape the language. It's incredible language.
Yeah.
And that feels like what God is willing to and able to do at any point through any of us, through Jesus. It's just an incredible grace that he is continually offering. Mm-hmm. And it's forgiveness, not innocence.
Mm-hmm.
That's better. I'd rather be accepted guilty and forgiven try to have to act innocent.
Yeah.
That's a hard act.
Yeah.
I've done it before. Stressful.
For me, probably the one thing that made the biggest impression on me just listening is I keep thinking that the only requirement to come before God and ask for a new life is that you're willing to say that you're guilty.
Mm-hmm.
That you're
pretty simple.
Right. That you're willing to find yourself guilty and in a low place. And it's our guilt that qualifies us for his forgiveness and his grace. And I just keep thinking you confronted that in prison. You were guilty. And that's when he came to you and offered grace for the first time. And and I just, it really is the only qualification. For something new to happen.
The only response to a story like Betty's is that there is a God who gives grace and who rescues. And we may not be the funniest. We may not even be the smartest. I don't know. I think I'm kind of smart, but we may not be the smartest.
Easy there, Latasha.
We may not be the most humble, but the thing that I know is that we serve a God who saves, who rescues, and that's the only reason that I would do this. I would not do this to entertain. I would only do it because I would want there to be freedom for those who are listening on the other side.
Yeah, let's face it. There's way better podcasts out there that you'll laugh more, you'll cry more, you'll hear probably even better stories, but you will not hear much about God. There's just not that many places where women can go to hear other women try to process as best we can, try to process our lives through the lens of a God who loves us, a God who rescues, a God who wants to give grace.
So don't be afraid of the God part, right? Like, stick with us, because there's some good stuff on the other side.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
IKR is a production of Crossroads Church, Cincinnati, Ohio. Reach out to us using the hashtag IKR or email us at ikr@crossroads.net. Very special thanks for our music to Mae Klingler. Find her at mayklingler.com and more of her music on Spotify and iTunes. You will not be sorry you did.